Can't buy me love.
You might not be able to buy love, but Trump seems to be selling a lot of policies, like whether or not we should tax billionaires as much as we tax everybody else, which I would think would be a simple yes. Apparently not, and I'm so happy to bring my next guest on to help explain it all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage of the RNC 2024 coming to you from downtown Milwaukee. But not from downtown Milwaukee, from, I believe, New York and the East Coast somewhere. Happy to bring back Morris Pearl of the Patriotic Millionaires. Welcome back, Morris.
Great to be in your show, Maggie. Thanks for having me again.
Such an important time. And we had the executive director, Erica Payne, on yesterday. And she often frames up these discussions by reminding everybody that really, at a certain level, the elections are about money and who gets more of it. Explain a little bit from your perspective. You are a co-author with Ms. Payne on the book Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. You've also written the book Pay the People, Why Fair Pay is Good for Business and Great for America. What's at stake in this election?
Well, really, what government is about, what the economy is about, is how our resources are divided between people. On one side, you have the idea that people like me, investors who don't work, but who own things like stocks and bonds, should be richer. And the other side, you have a party that believes that people who work for a living should get a bigger piece of the pie. And people have to make up their mind and decide how to vote based on that, because that's really what it comes down to, is how we share things between all the people who live within our country.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important to break it down at that most fundamental level, because a tax break, if it's going to a corporation or a billionaire, in some ways is like us middle class folks writing a check to that person, because either some service or something else is not going to be provided. And if that tax break continues on for a long time, but we still need that revenue, it's going to shift that burden to middle class people so that we end up paying more in the long run. Morris, explain to folks a little bit what happened under Donald Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. I'm going to put jobs in air quotes because trickle-down economics is not a thing. It's nearly always trickle-up, meaning we work harder, we pay more, and richer people get richer.
Yeah, money does not trickle down. Money trickles up. Every time you pay your mortgage payment or your rent payment or your iPhone bill, a little bit of that money goes up, up, up to the people that own stock in the banks and Apple and the phone companies like Verizon. That's how people like me get rich. A few pennies at a time from everybody in the country, and a few hundred million people, those pennies add up. And the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you know, was passed in the middle of the night and around Christmas week in 2017. And it worked great if your objective was for people like me to get wealthier, because I did. They cut the tax rate for corporations, companies, but issue stock that I own, from 35% to 21%. Strictly because of that one thing, my investments went up in value by 21% approximately. And look up, Warren Buffett gave a speech about this in early 2018, you know, a year later, about what the result of that was. Early 2019, he gave the speech. But that's what happened. They cut the tax because what I own when I invest, I own pieces of these businesses, Berkshire Hathaway's, Warren Buffett's company, Apple, other companies like that. And previously, 35% went to pay for the rest of the people, 65% went to the owners. Then they changed it. that only 21% went to the people and the other 79% went to the owners. That's a huge difference from going from 65% to 79%. I am a lot richer because of that one thing. And if somehow the American people think that investors like me are supposed to get richer, well, vote for the guy who's in Milwaukee, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, some of the impacts are just incredible. I mean, we're looking at a time now where the effective tax rate for billionaires is lower than the effective tax rate paid by everyone else in the country. That alone seems to be so perverse that it could justify a vote for Joe Biden or whomever the Democratic candidate may be, because billionaires paying less tax than everyone else should be an objectively identifiable bad thing. And they now control all of the billionaires in the United States, wealth totaling $6 trillion, up from just $3 trillion before Donald Trump became president. Why is this not more clearly seen by people? How is this being covered up in a way?
I think what it is that it's not, people are arguing about the tax rates and, oh, is it fair to pay this percentage or that percentage or whatever? It's not just the tax rate. It's what you consider income to multiply it by. Look at someone like Mr. Bezos. He only makes, $100,000 a year or something in salary. Not much more than a regular person does. He pays some tax on that. But he's a billionaire. He owns a large part of Amazon, for instance. And he's made billions and billions of dollars. But that's not considered income. So he doesn't have to pay any tax on that. The basic issue is that if you're a billionaire, you don't need any income. And here in America, our basic tax is an income tax. If you don't have income, you don't pay income tax. Kind of simple. And so that's why Joe Biden and some of the other Democrats have proposed a variety of taxes so that billionaires should pay a tax even if they don't get a paycheck that you can deduct the taxes from, like tax deduct from your paycheck every week.
Yeah, I've often said to friends and others while talking at churches or on bar stools that when you hear things like income tax or sales tax or a consumption tax, think to yourself, well, who actually earns wages and income? That's who's getting taxed. Who actually buys most of the stuff? That's who's getting taxed. If you start talking about corporate tax rate or estate taxes, if you don't own a corporation or at least a significant part of one, and you don't have $11 million, you don't have an estate, those tax rate cuts aren't benefiting you. It's astounding to me that we're in a moment where wealth inequality has reached the heights that it has in a slow but inexorable march towards greater and greater inequity. We're talking about massive corporate tax cuts. The proposal by Donald Trump and Project 2025 is to bring that rate down, which they already did, from 35 to 21, but to drive that down even lower to 18%, to lower capital gains tax. If you don't know what capital gains tax is, don't worry, it's not you, except if they continue to lower these things and replace that revenue source with sales tax, all it's doing is shifting tax burden from the richest people and those that own assets to people who work for a living. Or am I getting that wrong, Morris?
Yeah, if you think about it, somebody like me, most of my money is in investments. I don't pay very much sales tax. I mean, I probably don't pay any more than you do. You know, yes, I do go out to eat at restaurants occasionally. But if you look at somebody who's living paycheck to paycheck and they're going out to buy diapers and buy gas for their car and commuting to work and doing a lot of things that I don't do, they're paying sales tax on virtually all of their income, possibly all their disposable income. And so a sales tax is a much higher percentage of income for someone who works for a living than for someone who's already very wealthy. And that's why some of the very rich people who are very greedy in the short term think a sales tax is exactly the way to do. Oh, we should encourage people who save all of their money. People who save all of their money are people who are already rich, let me tell you. Most people...
Because you don't have to spend it to live. Yeah. Exactly. Let's spend a couple minutes thinking and talking more about measuring tax burdens as actual a percentage of income or a percentage of overall wealth, money that you have access to. It places things in much, much sharper relief. And what I mean by that is you take the total of all taxes paid by any individual or any income quadrant or any wealth quadrant, and you start to see those stark inequalities in much, much clearer relief. I think we need to start talking about tax burdens in much clearer terms because, you know, a little bit of a shell game when they start moving the terminology around. Again, when we talk about what burden the middle class is going to face if we're looking at a consumption tax or a 10% tariff on imported goods, how devastating could this be to the middle class if Trump is elected to a second term?
Well, I mean, think about the things that you use, that you buy that are imported, like gasoline, like your iPhone, like the clothes that you're wearing, like your headphones, like a lot of things that you buy are imported. And think about paying 10% more for all of that stuff. And that will cost you a lot of money. But someone who's already rich, you know, very smaller proportion of my money is spent on stuff. So that would affect me less in proportion to how much money I make than it would affect you. And so that's why
my special
shifting it.
Incredibly inequitable. My special guest this half hour is Morris Pearl, one of the board members of the Patriotic Millionaires, a group that's dedicated to seeing a fairer tax system in this country where the wealthy and the biggest corporations pay their fair share, not just the middle class and those of us who have to work for a living. Morris, can you stick around for another segment?
Sure.
Wonderful. I'm Maggie Dawn. We've got special live coverage coming to you from downtown Milwaukee for the 2024 RNC. Don't go anywhere. The sun is shining. And I'll be back with Morris in just a moment.
We're not just doing this for money. We're doing it for a load of money.
Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee for our special RNC 2024 coverage. My guest this half hour is Morris Pearl, the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires. You all are a special group, Morris, so I wanted to tell people who the Patriotic Millionaires are and why did you all come together to do what you're doing?
We came together in 2010. When then President Obama was looking at whether or not to renew the tax cuts that were done back in 2001 after the World Trade Center terrorist attack. And Erica Payne, the founder of the group, got together 56 millionaires to send a letter to the president saying to let our taxes rise to where they were before, not to continue the tax cut, sign the Patriotic Millionaires. And it was considered so outrageous that people thought that paying taxes was patriotic, which was, of course, the natural way of things in the 1940s, 50s, into the 60s,
yes,
even the 70s.
Like buying war bonds, right?
that
was considered patriotic.
They used to make music videos,
yes,
about how patriotic it is to pay our taxes and how proud people were. And, you know, I paid for this plane just like Rockefeller did. But that was back when, I don't know, America was great or something, that people thought that paying taxes was patriotic. So anyway, we got together, we signed it, the Patriotic Millionaires. People thought that was outrageous. We made the evening news all over the place. And, you know, that's 14 years later, I guess. We now have hundreds of members from around the country. We have a budget of high enough to pay 17 full-time staff people. And we're getting our members to speak up, to talk at rallies, to talk at groups, to talk to people like you, to go on the news and explain that it's not good for wealthy people to live in a country with a few rich people and lots of poor people. You know, they tried that in South Africa when I was a teenager. It did not end well for the rich people. So we want to change the course of America before we end up like that. We've seen, you know, we've seen riots in the streets. And yeah, each one had some proximate cause of someone being murdered and some outrageous things happening. But the real problem is so many Americans feel like they're being treated like second-class citizens. And they're right. And they're at the point of just giving up on America and, you know, voting for anything. And we want to change the course of America so that people are treated fairly, so that rich people like me pay at least the same tax rates as people like you who have money deducted from your paycheck every single week. And that's what the Patriotic Millionaires are about.
Well, I thank you for what you're doing. And just some historical context, as you were referencing, Morris, between 1931 and 1987, the top tax rate was at or above 50%. It, in fact, reached upwards of 90% in 1944 and 1945, to your exact point, Morris, about Americans feeling it was patriotic to pay their taxes, to do their duty, to ensure that this country had robust defense. But since 1987, it has been below 40%. Again, I'm speaking of the top tax rate. Tell us a little bit about what Joe Biden has proposed in terms of a tax on billionaires.
Well, the reason that billionaires are billionaires is because they're really rich, not because they get big paychecks. Somebody like Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg, they don't receive billion-dollar paychecks that you see tax deducted. No, they have brokerage statements that say they have billions of dollars worth of stock in their companies. But that's not considered income. So what President Biden has suggested is a billionaire's income tax, so that when somebody's making money from their stock going up, they should pay some tax on that. And it would, the tax would be credited against what they eventually would pay when they die or sell the stock or something. But so they would pay some tax on years when they make billions of dollars from their stock price going up, whether or not they get money in their actual checks. So that's what he's saying, is that people that are already rich, who make billions of dollars from their investments rising in value, should pay some taxes. That doesn't sound too controversial to me.
Nor I, Morris. The way that I've liked to summarize this is that wealth should be taxed just like work. And if you're someone who works for a living, ask any candidate that you're considering voting for or look on their campaign websites for what they're doing to tax wealthy people, people that don't work anymore because they don't need to. And unless that person can assure you that they believe the fundamental truth that wealth needs to be taxed exactly like work is, if not more, in this country, you're voting against someone who does not have your interests at heart. It's as simple as that. Where can people find out more about the Patriotic Millionaires and this sort of information that we're talking about here, Morris?
PatrioticMillionaires.org. We have a website. And we have a staff of people who want to work with people who to join our group. We're more than willing to have more people join. We have a few hundred members around the country who speak out on these things. We have 17 staffers who help them. And we'd be glad to have more people to join our cause.
Wonderful. Let's take a quick couple of calls. Dave from Madison, you're on the air with Morris. Say hello. And do you have a question or comment?
I have a bunch of comments, actually, if that's okay.
Go for it.
No, I just wanted to say a few things. You mentioned about the sales tax and that the rich, the wealthy, only spend a small amount of their income, and so they pay less sales taxes as a proportion of their income. It's also because they consume a lot of services, and services are either very low taxed or not taxed at all, I believe, in most states, and so that's a huge problem too. You also mentioned the 11 million, the estate tax, and $11 million, which is the threshold for when you have to start paying it. It's double that, by the way, for couples.
Miracles.
Also, you know, if you're deferring capital gains constantly, which if you don't realize it, if you're deferring capital gains, you know that money generates that money that you would otherwise pay in taxes generates a return.
Dave. We're going to have to leave it there. But he's exactly right. That money is earning more money. That is the capital gain, and we need to tax that just like we tax work. Big thanks to you, Morris. Always a pleasure to speak with you. That's Morris Thank Pearl, you. Chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, my special guest during Civic Media's special coverage of Milwaukee RNC 2024. Can't wait to have you back again, Morris. Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie. See you next week.
We've got another fantastic guest coming up. I'm going to be joined by County Executive David Crowley talking about the RNC and what it's doing for the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County here on the world stage. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got special coverage coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee for the 2024 RNC. I'm really excited to bring back my former boss and current county executive extraordinaire, Mr. David Crowley. David, always great to have you. Thanks for making time.
Oh, anytime, Maggie. Thank you for having me, and appreciate all the great work you're doing still.
Thank you. Good to hear your voice, friend. So, you're down at the RNC. You're hearing the speeches. What do you think?
Quite frankly, I'm underwhelmed by the speeches. But the real reason why I'm really excited is because this is a great opportunity. It's just a great opportunity for our community to really use this as kind of like our Super Bowl to continue to put the spotlight on Milwaukee in general. And so it is my hope and my goal that this not only becomes an economic boost for this week, but as we look forward to the future of Milwaukee, that we continue to see that boom. But at the end of the day, when I think about these policies and I think about the speeches that have been going on, at least up until this point, I would say it's been underwhelming. As a Democrat who is hosting the Republican National Convention, I think many of your listeners understand that I don't agree much with this nominee or the policies of the Republican Party. And so this, for me, gives an opportunity to kind of see the message that they're bringing to the table. So Democrats, we can give a stark contrast and not only share our vision, but tell the story of the past 3.5 years.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. We've certainly been trying to do that. I've been talking about all of Joe Biden's policy accomplishments in a segment that we try to run at least every day, Joe Biden's top 100 policies, talking about what he's gotten done for the middle class, especially, and people like the folks that you serve here in Milwaukee County in southeastern Wisconsin, but I, like you and like the mayor, have always been, when asked, should we have the RNC, my answer has always been unequivocally yes, yes, and more yes. Because, again, it puts Milwaukee on a world stage, and people need to know what an amazing, amazing city this is. Friendly, cheap, easy to get around, even during the RNC. I mean, what more can you ask for? Going to be a delegate. You're going to be a delegate to the DNC coming up. What do you think we can expect in terms of tone difference between the RNC and the DNC?
And the Biden-Harris administration have been talking about. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, sir.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
All right. I think that Democrats, we've been putting policies out on the table. We've been telling the story, talking about the investments that President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris look at the stark differences, particularly in rhetoric. You would assume that, you know, after this past weekend, you know, everybody on both sides of the aisle would have tried to find out rhetoric, because let's put it out there, any level of political violence rhetoric is not good for our
We're going to have to. We're going to have to come back to the county executive. If we're just a little bit of a problem with the cell service there, sir, give us another call back at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. It's remarkable, I think, the stage that Milwaukee is on and the great showing that the city is making. And it really does show what a Midwestern, middle-class city is all about, not just hard work, but also openness. That idea of openness, in my opinion, is something that is that I find missing generally in the tone that we hear from the Republican Party these days. It was certainly not openness that defined Ron Johnson's remarks. It's not openness that defines the rhetoric coming from the vice presidential pick, J.D. Vance. It's not openness that we hear from Donald Trump. I just wanted to share a bit about some of the things that J.D. Vance has shared or said in the past. As we try to get Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley back. Oh, here he is. County Executive Crowley, you were talking. We were talking about the tone differences between the RNC and DNC. Sorry, we lost you there for a moment, sir. Please continue.
I apologize for that. But the tone difference is that you're going to continue to see Democrats talk about policies, discussions, issues that folks talk about at the kitchen table. You know, when I look at the state of Wisconsin, the values that we believe in, we believe that women should have access to reproductive health freedoms. We fought and we won those battles long ago, and we need to make sure that we protect those things. And, you know, I heard you talking about this past recent vice presidential pick by Trump, which is a guy who actually doubled down on having an abortion ban. Thing that he doesn't believe that there should be exceptions for rape and incest. But also, you know, he was also a never Trumper. And so I think this also speaks to the fact that Trump, if you're going to be a Republican, you're either going to have to be with Trump or you're not. And if you're not with Trump, that means that your position, your views are going to be on the line. And so why not pick an inexperienced person like J.D. Vance, who's been in office for, I don't know, 18 months, I think longer than he has in both the assembly and as a county executive. But, you know, I think this really speaks to the fact that he's not even doubling down on conservative values. He's doubling down on MAGA values.
Yep. It's really extraordinary. I mean, when I heard the pick was going to be Vance, I just thought, oh, my goodness, it's a double down on MAGA. It's not about trying to calm the fears of even the business community. It's not about trying to pick a candidate that might help moderate the tone. It's about ramping up the tone, which scares me to bits. Again, as you pointed out, Mr. County Executive, J.D. Vance has said that free childcare is an attack on the working poor. Perhaps Mr. Vance hasn't talked to anybody that's working and has to pay for childcare, because if childcare was free, I don't think they would consider that an attack. Mr. Vance has said that abortion should be banned even in cases of rape and incest. He supported a national 15-week abortion ban. J.D. Vance has even said that people, women in violent marriages, should stay in those marriages. That's who this guy is. And part of it, I wonder, you know, what's your take? Is he cynical or does he actually believe this stuff?
Listen, J.D. Vance is Donald Trump 2.0, but half the age. And so at the end of the day, he's looking to, you know, Trump is looking to see how he can continue to have a stronghold over the Republican Party, even in the near future. And so we got to get a handle on this. We can't continue to focus on the appearances and focusing on the personalities of these presidential candidates, because everyone wants to, you know, we've had Democrats, you know, asking Biden to step aside. But that's been a true distraction because we haven't been able to really talk about the issues at hand. And so when we talk about issues, we know that folks in Wisconsin, they line up with those Democratic issues no matter where they're staying. And when I look at this entire state, the rural women, the suburban women, and urban women in places like Milwaukee, there's no way they can see themselves siding with the J.D. Vance. And so the rhetoric that we're seeing right now on the Republican side, they're really doubling down. But quite frankly, I really thought that they would tone it down, you know, after the tragic events that we had seen in Pennsylvania. But unfortunately, we just haven't seen that happen on the convention floor. And I think, you know, one person particularly, Senator Ron Johnson, who called for unity throughout this whole time, never used the word once during his speech.
Yeah, I don't know about you, David, but I don't think the man knows what it means. He'd probably have to look it up in the dictionary. I wanted to get your reaction, Brian, if we've got the sound of Senator Johnson discussing Democrats as a clear and present danger. I wanted to get Mr. County Executive's reaction to that. Brian, if you've got the sound, we'd love
to
roll it.
Today's Democrat agenda, their policies, are a clear and present danger to America, to our institutions, our values, and our people.
I mean, Mr. County Executive, what is he talking about?
Wow. I don't know what he's talking about because he clearly doesn't understand the agenda that the Democrats have been pushing. Look, here in Milwaukee, because of our relationship with the Biden administration, we have been able to invest in affordable housing all across Milwaukee County, particularly in suburban neighborhoods for the very first time in our community's history. We've been able to expand our mental health emergency center, bringing that closer to individuals who are experiencing both not just mental health issues, but as well as drug addiction issues. And so when we talk about the Democratic agenda is about improving the lives of everybody. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, in order to get good policies passed through, something the Republicans wouldn't understand, you got to work with everybody. And you have to have a level of compromise, something that we haven't seen the Republicans do, quite frankly, in many, many years. And so, you know, Ron Johnson, all he wants to do is continue to attack Democrats and our ideas. But the ideas that we're fighting for example, affordable housing, is needed in every community across the state of Wisconsin and across this country. So it's just unfortunate to see him really speaking again to the rhetoric and not really bringing any real policy discussions to the table.
It seems to me that that is indeed the rub, right? There's no discussion of policy particular. There's no refutation of the effectiveness of Joe Biden's policies for the middle class, for those with kids. That is simply absent. We can talk and focus on your administration, the incredible successes that you've chalked up for Milwaukee County and residents and citizens, housing, mental health, and also the opioid crisis. I wanted to touch upon that, really transformative leadership. And again, this, we've got J.D. Vance, who, according to a professor at Columbia University, basically ran a charade opioid charity, which, coming on the heels of the Hillbilly Elegy, is painful, if not disqualifying outright. Share a little bit, if you would, sir, what your administration has gotten done to help those struggling, especially with opioid addiction here in Milwaukee County.
Well, I'm extremely proud as far as what we have been doing, and I'm extremely proud of not what I have done, but my entire team and the partnerships that we've created with many of the organizations that have been on the front lines of this epidemic from the very beginning. And what we have done, one, we secured the largest, with your help, actually, one of the largest settlements in Wisconsin's history as it relates to the opioid epidemic for local units of government. So we've gotten $102 million, excuse me, and we've been able to invest that back into the community. We just recently announced a 9-year grant between all of the Milwaukee County departments to make sure that no one is falling through the cracks as it relates to not only getting the treatment services that they need, but how do we make sure they get all the other supportive services, right? And that's why we've implemented the no wrong door policy. No matter what door, no matter what service you're coming to receive through Milwaukee County, we're going to wrap around all those other services. But we've also, you know, granted out $3 million to local community organizations to focus on treatment, to focus on prevention, to focus on other resources that folks absolutely need. But we know that we just can't tackle it in a silo. And so how does housing, particularly with our unsheltered population, how we're not only finding them housing and giving them the tools to have a roof over their head, but how do we wrap around those services to make sure that they can become clean? And we've been putting, you know, vending machines, harm reduction vending machines all across Milwaukee County. We've had 11 up thus far. We will be announcing in the next couple of days or weeks about 8 other locations that we'll be putting these vending machines. And we know that they're working. Inside these harm reduction vending machines are Narcan to make sure that people don't overdose. We're putting gun lock, a prescription medication bags to make sure that people can properly dispose of their medication so it doesn't get into the wrong hands of the individuals who may have some level of addiction.
Sorry to jump in, Mr. County Executive. We're going to have to leave it there. That is Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley telling you how he saves lives with the no wrong door policy, just as Joe Biden uses whole of government to serve all of the middle class. Thanks so much, David. Good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with... Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network special live coverage coming to you from downtown Milwaukee for the 2024 Republican National Convention. Got a great show queued up for you starting tomorrow. I'm going to have Scott Klug, former Republican congressman from the great state of Wisconsin, joining me along with Democratic former chair of the Democratic Wisconsin Party, Mike Tate. They are, too, part of the Democracy Defense Project. We'll be talking about free and fair elections. I'm also going to be joined by Caitlin Henderson, a researcher for Oxfam International. Don't miss any of it. And really excited to finally share with you this afternoon that we will be doing a special joint broadcast. The two hosts of the Devil's Advocates Radio, Mike Crute and Dominic Salvio, will be joining me as special guests all across the Civic Media Radio Network here on the Maggie Dawn Show, including on WMDX out of Madison. So don't forget to tune in anywhere on the Civic Media Radio Network tomorrow in the 3 o'clock hour. All right, Brian, we got to talk a little baseball. It's been a couple of days. There's only been a little bit of news happening. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, we're also on the All-Star break, so that kind of helps.
So that was my question, Brian. I have never really cared about the All-Star game. It has devolved, in my opinion, into the home run derby, and that's all anybody cares about. Where do you sit? Are you pro All-Star game, or do you not really care at all?
I used to enjoy the home run derby. The last one I enjoyed was when Schwarber was involved. I did not watch this last one. just I haven't actually watched anything in the last couple of days, but yeah, Home Run Derby to me is just a lot of fanfare generally. You never really get all of the best people in the best home run hitters generally. And on top of that, I feel like they've been tweaking the way they do it to the point where there's no meaning anymore. It feels they like and all-star selection. It's weird the way that it's done, and it's spammed, and it's you can just send bots in to vote for people, and it ends up, oh my goodness, the people, the cities with lots of people voting in them tend to get more nominees. Oh, it's crazy how the populations of the cities matter to the All-Star Game voting. It's just a ridiculous system, just like a lot of the administration around Major League Baseball, as I've been seeing. It's really interesting that the commissioners of both baseball and hockey hate the sport that they are actually commissioning.
It's a little strange. Like, why would one raise one's hands for that job if you really don't dig on the sport? I have to say, I could have used a little baseball that wasn't the All-Star break this week. A little distraction from what's going on, I think, would have been appreciated, at least on my part. But I am looking forward to the Brewers returning to action, I believe, this Saturday. Of course, we're going to have that here on the Civic Media Radio Network, WISS. Let me see. I got to find the exact call out, so I'm giving you the greatest information about that. Yep, we're going to have the Brewers return to action starting this Saturday. They're playing the Twins at the Twins. That's a 5:35 p.m. broadcast start. You can find the Brewers action on WRCE out of Richland Center, RJN and Racine, and Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, and of course 98Q Country in Park Falls. Don't miss any of that action. We'll have your Brewers baseball coverage for the entire weekend. I haven't been able to spend too much time in legal arcana, so that's where I wanted to end today's show, in addition to a little baseball. In the midst of all of the political news, the terrible violence over the weekend, the kickoff of the RNC, there was also this bit of legal news. Alec Baldwin's trial has been dismissed with prejudice. He had been facing very serious charges related to the death of someone working on his film. He shot a gun that should have had bullets. It had real ammunition, and someone died. He was facing very, very serious charges. The reason that I'm talking about this is because some of the online commentary that I've seen is frankly scary. I've heard a lot of people talking about the fact that Alec Baldwin's criminal case was dismissed on a technicality. Your constitutional rights as a criminal defendant aren't technicalities. It is essential to the entire legal system, especially the criminal justice system, that the prosecution present and make available to the defense all evidence. They don't get to determine, oh, well, this counts and this doesn't. It's called Brady material. It's so called or so named because of a Supreme Court case many, many moons ago that required the prosecution to give that information to the defense. Alec Baldwin's trial, his criminal charges, were dismissed because the prosecution in that case failed to provide this Brady material to the defense.
2 minutes.
What was this Brady material about? Well, the entire case hinged on where the bullets that went into the gun that ended up killing someone came from. The source of those bullets, who had them, who brought them to the set, who touched them at the set, who loaded the weapon. That is the whole of the case. Was Alec Baldwin effectively criminally culpable for not himself better supervising how those bullets moved around, where they came from, etc.? It came out that the prosecution was given information about a group of bullets coming from some other previously unknown source, and they actively withheld that information and hid it from the defense. I'll be clear. That ain't a technicality. That is a fundamental constitutional violation. And Alec Baldwin's criminal case should have been dismissed, and it was properly dismissed. You want to know what a technicality is? Well, the special counsel's office really shouldn't exist. They're just too independent. So it's fine if you stole the super secret spy documents. Meh. Nothing to see here. That's going to do it for me today. Devil's Advocates are next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Take care, everybody. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
So, you know, Obamacare is still in place, and we've doubled the debt. I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.